welcome you to the last August edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. And with me, always, is Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black and Tara Wellman on Twitter. Tara's back with us this week. And we will preface by the fact that she hasn't seen a whole lot of baseball this week for various reasons. So take that for what it's worth. She's still going to have better opinions than I do, even though I did watch some of the games. But we're going to talk a lot about a first-place Cardinals team. And Tara, I think, you know, it's been 2 weeks since we got a show together. And if I'm right about that time, you know, that was about the time the Cardinals had dropped to like 3.5 back of the Cubs. And we were all starting to look at the sky and wonder if it was about to come down on top of us. And since then, the schedule's gotten a little easier. The Cubs have done their part in falling apart. And now Cardinals are 2.5 games up going into Milwaukee with a chance to, I don't want to say bury the Brewers, but if they win that series starting tomorrow, that leaves, even just winning the series, puts the Brewers 5.5 back, getting almost into September. That's going to be tough for them. This could be a really big week.
Yeah, it feels like, and this sounds like a cop-out answer, but it really feels like every series at this point is big just because of how close this division has been and the fact that no one's really pulled away of those three teams. I mean, everyone's still within striking distance, and the Cardinals are in that really favorable part of their schedule where they have to be able to take advantage of that in order to, you know, put themselves in a position to, in fact, win the division. We all expected this division to be better than it is, but I think we expected it to be absolutely as tight as it is between those three teams. It just hasn't been because necessarily they've beat each other up. It's been because they just haven't been all that good in general. So all three teams have pretty significant flaws, and it's probably going to come down to which team can, you know, cover for those flaws with other things most effectively, because, you know, as John Mozeliak is aware, there was a finality to this year's trade deadline, and they can't really go about, you know, reinforcing any of those weaknesses from outside the organization. They're just going to have to figure out how to work around them. And right now, the Cardinals have done a better job of working around them. All of a sudden, the offense looks like it's capable of putting up some runs, and you're getting contributions from guys up and down the lineup, including on Sunday, Matt Carpenter, which was great to see. We'll talk more about that, I'm sure. But just in general, it's a team that looks like it's putting some pieces together. They've gotten pretty decent starting pitching from the rotation. Most of the time, it's coming from Jack Flaherty, who's really stepped it up in the second half. Still, for the most part, getting pretty good starts out of Dakota Hudson. A couple of rough starts here and there from Adam Wainwright and Miles Michaelis. And then that fifth spot is still a little bit of a crapshoot, but it has not hurt them quite as much as we expected it to so far. There's still a lot riding on that as far as what they do when they do play the Brewers and the Cubs a couple more times yet this season. But, you know, we have often in the past talked about the fact that the Cardinals seem to lose the games that they absolutely should win. And this was a week in which they won the games that they absolutely should win. So it's hard to be too disappointed or too frustrated with a team that is doing exactly what it needs to do to put itself in a pretty good position going up against those top two teams.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people on Twitter today talking about, does it really count if you're beating the Rockies and the Reds and things of that nature? And I think exactly it does. I mean, one, a win is a win. And, you know, right now the Cardinals need all the wins they can get. Two, this is not, you know, they played a lot of these teams in May and June and did not win those games. But, you know, three, yeah, I think that's really it. You just got to take care of business and let the chips fall where they may. And they're doing it. They're not doing it, especially this week. It wasn't because the other team just fell apart on them. They won the games. I mean, like you said, Flaherty and Hudson have pitched remarkably well, and the offense is clicking enough that when you look at the top three teams, I think right now, the flaws that the Cardinals have may be smaller than either one of the other two. The Cubs' bullpen has been atrocious. It has cost them some games as of late. And Milwaukee's, you know, all year long has had problems with their starting pitching. And right now they have a negative run differential. I mean, they've given up almost 30 runs more than they've scored. And that's not exactly what you want to see going into September if you want to be a contender. So,
well, and they're not getting, just as far as the Brewers are, because we're looking at that series, they're not getting, when we saw them early in the season, they were getting contributions up and down their lineup. Mm-hmm. They're not right now. I mean, Lorenzo Cain has had a terrible year. You've got other guys in that lineup. Shaw hasn't been great. There are guys that were supposed to be the heavy hitters in the middle of their lineup that aren't even with the major league team anymore. So, this was a team that thought their offense could carry them when their pitching couldn't. And at the start of the year, they looked very much like that kind of team. It just hasn't broken that way. So, yeah, those flaws are significant because not only does it expose the weakness in their pitching, but it also just sort of saps their depth on the offensive side as well, which is why I think we're seeing them slip further and further behind as the Cubs figure out how to hold on to games and the Cardinals go out and win the ones that they need to. I mean, I would agree. I think that at this point, the Cardinals look like the team with the right pieces to pull something off. Now, that doesn't mean that they will, because Paul Goldschmidt looked like a really good piece that hasn't maybe performed up to expectations. So that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but, you know, it's interesting to see the tables turn so quickly when, like you said, 2 weeks ago, we were wondering if the Cardinals were the team that was going to get buried.
Yeah, exactly. And you look, I think the biggest thing you look, as you're talking about that Milwaukee offense, you just look at the Cardinals from what they did to this week when they played the Brewers. They walked Christian Yelich basically any time they had to, and nobody was able to make them pay for that. And that was big. I mean, if you can curtail Christian Yelich and right now, that's a huge chunk of their offense. Now, curtailing him is a little difficult, and you want to make sure nobody's on base when he comes up, because then you have to pitch to him. But, you know, if you can keep everybody else off balance, he's not going to be able to carry the whole team, unlike what we saw in the beginning of the year where he destroyed the Cardinals completely. And then you look, you know, I saw on the broadcast today that the Brewers, released Chashin, who was their opening day pitcher.
Yeah.
You know, and his ERA was close to 6, and you know, they're just not getting that. So, yeah, you knock on wood, I still remember back when they were 20-10, and I said this team didn't look like they'd go through a whole long losing streak, and that was completely wrong. But it does, I mean, you'd much rather be where the Cardinals are than where the other two teams are right now. Going into September, I mean, the Cubs have a day off tomorrow, and then they go play the Mets, where they have to face Stroman, Syndergaard, and DeGrom on the road, where they have been absolutely terrible. You got to like the chances of at least the Mets taking that series, maybe 2-1. If you can beat the Brewers, you might gain a little bit of gain on ground on the Cubs. You could go into September with a 2-3-4-game lead, and that's not a place that we've seen the Cardinals be since 2015. They've not had a significant lead. I think last year we saw them have a lead in the wild card late, and then they blew it, but they've definitely not had a division lead, and they've not had a chance to really control their own destiny all throughout the month of September, but right now they're looking like that's going to be a real good chance.
It's interesting because, you know, Mike Schilt kind of slow plays all of this as far as the standings go, and we've at times been a little frustrated with his insistence on, look, we're going to get there. We're going to put it together. We're going to stay competitive. We're going to be right there. We're going to push these other teams, because you want to see the results of that right away. Mm-hmm. I also think that the Cardinals have a fan base that really wants the Cardinals to do what the Dodgers have done and just make such a run away with the division so that there's no question about who the best team in the division is. And that was never going to be the case. You know, the other two teams are too good, and the Cardinals didn't set themselves that much apart. And it's one thing to say, man, this team better make the postseason. It's another thing to feel like they have to just, you know, turn on the jetpack and leave everybody in the dust in, you know, June. And when they don't do that, and when they do struggle, and when it is an up and down road, it's a little disconcerting to maybe not see that same level of intensity coming from, you know, the top as far as Mike Schilt is concerned. But I wonder how much that sort of even keeled, just keep doing what we know we need to be doing thing could eventually pay off. Now, a week from now, we could be flipping the script entirely and saying just the opposite, because a month ago, we were talking about how Mike Schilt maybe wasn't intense enough as far as the leadership of this team. But it is interesting when you see how the guys who are actually in the clubhouse every day have to play the long game and not get too high or get too low, as everyone likes to say, because of the day-to-day results. And you know, I'm curious how much that actually, it's one of those things that you can't really quantify how much it matters. But it certainly seems to be the way of Mike Schilt. And, right now he's got a team that's putting together, you know, some pretty significant wins in a stretch where they could bury themselves if they weren't on their game.
Yeah, I want to talk about at least two of Mike Schilt's decisions that have really kind of come to a head, not just this week, but, well, one of them was this week. One's been kind of in the making most of the month. And to kind of set him aside, because I think when we got to beginning of this month, there was a lot of Mike Schilt is not that much different than Mike Matheny, because of when he was playing Tommy Edman in the outfield and things of that nature. I think that we're seeing that he is. And the first one I want to talk about is his use of Michael Wacha. Now, again, we go back to the trade deadline. We know that the Cardinals should have gotten a fifth starter, and I don't know that there's going to be any justification, even if this team wins division, for them not getting a fifth starter. But we've seen Michael Wacha pitch better over the last two or three starts, but we've also seen Mike Schilt not at all hesitant to pull him, even in a good start. We saw that not today, but the start before that, where the Cardinals had a chance to score in the bottom of the fourth inning, and even though Wacha had four scoreless innings, he's out of there, they pinch hit for him, and while that didn't turn out, they did wind up winning the game later on with some other offense. I think that if they're going to be able to keep that quick hook and manage Michael Wacha better, that mitigates a little bit of what they didn't do at the trade down. It doesn't forgive it, but it makes it a lot better than trying to make sure you get Michael Wacha to go six innings every night.
Yeah, and it's the sort of aggressive nature that we saw at times when this team looked like it was playing maybe the best version of baseball that we had seen this season. And then he sort of got away from that, and we were kind of going, what is happening here? What are we doing? Because that it was working, what you were doing. So it is nice to see that maybe the difference is that Mike Schilt, even when not necessarily given all the pieces he'd like to have, can still get the best out of the pieces that he does have. I also think it's pretty significant that his support of Michael Wacha has never wavered, but the way that he's utilized him has. And I think that in many ways, that's what we all sort of expected Mike Matheny to be able to do better, was to be the player's manager and be the guy that knew what it was like because he'd been there, but also be able to, you know, apply the baseball IQ that he'd accrued over the years. It seems like at times we were wondering when that was going to show up for Mike Schilt, because there seems to be this maybe a longer leash than a lot of people would like for there to be with these guys. We saw it with Ozuna at the beginning of the year. We've seen it with Colton Wong, who up until fouling a ball off of his foot was the hottest hitter that the Cardinals have had consistently since about June. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a thing that's going a bit under the radar because he's not the guy that's supposed to be carrying the lineup. But, you know, there are a lot of pieces to this team that may be where they are now because of the patience and because of the steadiness of Mike Schilt. So, you know, there's some of that, I think, that gets a little frustrating from the outside looking in. But, yeah, where Waka is concerned, it does seem to be the right blend of unwavering support, but also a clear intention with how he goes about using him in the games, which has allowed the bullpen to settle into the roles that it needs to be in. And it's allowed, honestly, Michael Waka to go out and not feel like perhaps he has to try to go six innings, but he can go, you know, 3 2/3 or 4, or, you know, if it goes beyond that, that's all bonus, but he can just handle the 4 innings that he's probably penciled in for and not feel like he has to push it beyond that, which, you know, I don't know quite what the mental or physical balance there is in not feeling like you have to push beyond your limits, but I would think that it's significant when you know that your manager's got your back, and this is a team that needs those innings as much as anything else. So a much better approach, I think, with Michael Waka, and I do, to your point, sort of rambling a bit, but I like the way that Mike Schilt has made the adjustment, considering he wasn't given any help at the deadline.
Yeah. And if the Cardinals want to score 6 or 7 runs every time Michael Walker's on the mound, that's fine, too.
Yeah.
Because it makes it a lot less stressful. I mean, today, you know, Walker gives up a couple of runs early on, and I don't think you worried too much because it was the Rockies and you thought the Cardinals would come around, and they did very quickly. But still, it was like, how long do you go with Michael Waka if the offense is sputtering? And didn't have to worry about that question, but it would have been an interesting. And again, should be noted, even though he had I think it was a 6-2 lead at the time, maybe 7-2, Michael Waka did not get the win today because he couldn't finish the 5th inning. And you know, he put a runner on, and Matheny went to him. Now, granted, he went to him after like 113 pitches. So, but I think it would have been very easy for him to let him try to go one more batter to get that win, and he didn't.
Which is what Matheny would have done.
Right, right. I mean, and we've seen that a number of times. We saw that a number of times with Matheny, and we've seen that occasionally with Schilt, but I don't feel like he does it nearly as much. And he's willing to make a move, and come next month when they have, you know, Ponce de Leon and probably Genesis Cabrera, and you'll have Junior Fernandez back, and you'll have a few more arms out there, he's probably going to be even more likely to make that switch. You know, I'd also like to think that Ryan Helsley is making some sort of impact to do something, but let's just do take one step at a time, apparently. But the other part is, of course, Matt Carpenter. We saw earlier this week that Mike Schilt came out and had a very long and in-depth discussion about Matt Carpenter with the media. Jeff Jones put a link out. Honestly, I got a chance to read most of it, but I don't know that I read it all. But, you know, it was this idea of how do you continue to encourage and be there for a player and a guy that, if he is right, can be very, very helpful down the stretch. Versus the fact that there are, you know, right now, I think, 32 games left after today's game. 33, I guess. How do you, you know, the time is short. We saw Mike Carpenter not start a couple times this week. He got a start today because of Colton Wong hitting the ball off his foot, which he should never really do.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, there's bunting, which is also a bad idea, and then there's hitting it off the foot, and I mean, you put them in whatever order you like, I guess. But and Carpenter comes out, has a home run, has, I think, 2 other hits, draws a walk, looked really good. And then it's one game. You don't want to say that much to it, but it's going to be kind of interesting to see how Carpenter is used down the stretch, especially if Wong gets healthy, versus what we would have expected, maybe.
Yeah, and, you know, if you haven't had a chance to read those comments from Mike Schilt, they are quite lengthy. I know I retweeted it a couple times. You can find it on Jeff Jones's Twitter account. It's a really interesting read, but if you read it, I would encourage you, and I'm going to say this because I got some really surprising responses from people on Twitter about this. Read it as someone who's speaking quite genuinely and not someone who's trying to talk in circles so that he doesn't have to give you an answer. Because that's my impression from the people that I know who interact with Mike Schilt all the time, is that for the most part, he is incredibly sincere in the things that he says. Even if you don't agree with them, you can at least appreciate the sense of sincerity in what he's saying, for the most part. Now, he's still a manager, and he's still gonna, you know, step in front of all of his players when he needs to shield them from some of the things that are said, but that's what he's supposed to do. But those comments about Matt Carpenter were really interesting on a really human level, because essentially what he was saying is, look, he's struggling and he knows he's struggling, and it's our job to try to help him out of that. So it's a really hard line to find, to, you know, be confident in someone's ability, but also know when it's time to, you know, go a different direction to make sure that the rest of the team isn't suffering because of it. It was a really interesting read. And, you know, I came away from it actually appreciating Mike Schilt as a person even more because of just some of the depth of the things that he was saying about, you know, how important it is for him to be able to be the person that's in their corner. And that's seems to be what he does even better than the baseball stuff, which is a really great quality to have in a person, especially the guy leading the charge. As far as Matt Carpenter is concerned, I think he was also quite transparent in saying that Matt's struggling and he can't figure out why, and it's frustrating, and it's as much a struggle for him to come in every day and know that he's struggling and he can't seem to fix it as it is for anyone to watch it. So to see him then on Sunday have a big day, just as Danny Mac called it on Fox Sports Midwest, that guy's a pro at these things.
Absolutely.
I'm glad he doesn't play bombs away, because we'd all be buried.
Buried behind you anyway. So,
well, you know, somebody's gotta win, right? Might as well be me. But no, Matt Carpenter, to see him come out and have a good day was really nice, because, like Mike Schilt said, when Matt Carpenter is playing like he's capable, he changes the entire complexion of this team. And I think that's part of the frustration, is that we know what he's capable of, or what he has been capable of. And that's also a piece that's significantly missing from this offense right now. So I don't know that you take anything away from Sunday except that it was nice to see him have a good day. I don't know if it means he's fixed or he's back or whatever, but certainly for a guy who seems to be needing a bit of a confidence boost, that had to be a nice piece of the puzzle for him right now.
Yeah, and I just pulled up his game log, and this is the first game. This is only the fourth game this year that he's had three hits, and the first of those games that he drew a walk as well. The most, you know, he had two RBIs, he had three runs scored. All in all, I mean, again, that's better than you could have ever expected out of Matt Carpenter, given what we've seen, because, you know, all three of those hits, three hit games, were between May 4th and June 17th, so it's been a while.
And one other thing, just I'm thinking back about those comments from Mike Schilt. A lot of people seemed really put off by the fact that he referenced what Matt Carpenter did last year, and took it in the sense that, well, here's what he did last year, so obviously he has to keep playing. That wasn't what he said. If you go back and read the comments, he was saying, look, the reason that there's confidence built up for this guy is because of the track record that he has, because of what he's done. And we know that when he is right, he can carry the team because he's done it before. It wasn't necessarily used as the reason for continuing to play him. It was the reason that there's sort of a stockpile of confidence and investment in the player, which I think are two very different things. You know, it's the same reason we reference anyone's past performance in baseball, because that's what we've seen them capable of before, and that's what gives you an indication of what you hope they can be going forward. So just, I would just, you know, be hesitant to be too critical of that part of the commentary, because I don't think it meant what a lot of people took it to mean.
And that's fair. I did think that, you know, it feels like, and I get where he's coming from, and I get why he would, but, you know, as people that have looked at this a little bit more and kind of lived this, a lot of us remember that the last, what, 5-6 weeks of last year, after an amazing run, were not good. And so this stretch of what has been bad for Matt Carpenter has lasted more than since March 28th or whatever the first of the season.
Oh, yeah, and I don't think anyone's arguing that. Right. I think, like I said, it's a point of reference, mm-hmm. not a reason.
Right.
And that's a very different thing.
Yeah, and I get that. And you're right. I mean, and again, that's what we're saying, right? I mean, if he can, again, we're not expecting him to be, you know, July 2018 Matt Carpenter, who's hitting 5 home runs in Wrigley Field or anything like that. But if he can be the kind of guy that he has been in the past, whatever form of Matt Carpenter we've seen, whether it's the doubles hitter or the high average hitter or the power hitter or whatever we've seen, if he can be something like this, this offense looks a lot better going down the stretch. But, again, how do you juggle that? A day like today, that probably earns him a start tomorrow, especially since Colton is most likely going to stay on the bench. Since they had to, drill a hole in his nail is not really what I want to discuss, so we'll move on. But so he'll probably get another chance, and if he has another good day tomorrow, then, you know, hey, who knows? I mean, because, you know, as much as we gave Schilt grief for playing Tommy Edman, and playing him in the outfield still was kind of iffy. but it's fair to show that, you know, that probably that extra playing time for Tommy Edman is what has helped him make the adjustments to be one of the better hitters over the last week to 10 days for this team. Without looking up the stats, you know, we've seen him be a very productive hitter. You know, it's probably helped that he's not, you know, leading off. And again, he's playing third base and things like that. But, you know, Mike Schilt stuck with him for a while. And, you know, you can argue how quickly you pull the trigger on getting somebody out of a lineup and things. But, you know, occasionally it's possible that Mike Schilt knows a little bit more about his players and his team than we do. And
it's possible.
I mean, I don't know how often that happens, but occasionally it might. So, again, that doesn't mean he's perfect at everything, but, you know, in hindsight, you can at least rationalize a little bit of what he did, even if he didn't mean it to be that way. It has worked out, and so that's why the Cardinals sit 2.5 games up. Before we wrap it, though, let's go back a little bit, and let's talk about this run that Jack Flaherty's on. An ERA, I think, of 0.79 in the second half. It seems like every night, every time he goes out there, it's the fifth or sixth inning, and we're talking about a no-hitter. It's just, this is the continued success that we thought. I mean, this is what everybody thought he was going to be, and then I think some may have figured he never was going to get to that level that was expected for him, but he seems to have finally taken that final step.
Yeah, and it's incredibly exciting, because this is the Jack Flaherty I think a lot of people, myself included, were really excited to see this year. I remember talking to Derek Gould for an episode of my off-season show, and he asked what I was looking forward to the most, and one of the things I said right off the bat was Jack Flaherty, because I was so impressed with him last year, not just from a stuff standpoint, but from the mentality he brought to the game and the way he was able to kind of own a little bit of a leadership role with some of the young players on this team. He just came across as a really impressive addition to this team. So I was looking forward to, you know, the 2.0 version of Jack Flaherty. But at the same time, I feel like we were all a little bit cautiously optimistic, because year two is always a little bit harder than year one, because everyone knows what you've got to work with now. So we saw that struggle at the beginning of the year. We saw his stuff not be quite as snappy as it is when he is at his best. And we saw big innings rattle him a little bit. And those are all things that he probably had to go through in order to take that next step to become that next version of the guy that we saw in 2018. And whatever it was around the All-Star break that clicked for him, man, is it fun to watch. And when Jack Flaherty is at his best, I hesitate to make a comparison directly, but there's a little bit of Chris Carpenter bulldog in him. And you see it in the way he sort of stalks off the mound, and you see it in the way that he reacts to, you know, pitches that were called strikes or weren't called strikes. But he also just works really quickly and slides into a rhythm that's, and it's really fun to watch. So this version of Jack Flaherty is really exciting because it feels like it's that next step, but there still feels like there's even more room to go from there. So, you know, scoreless inning after scoreless inning is fun. He's toyed with no hitters pretty deep into games a couple of times, and regardless of the competition, that's not easy. And he's doing it repeatedly, which is that consistency, right, that we talked about at the beginning of the season that just wasn't quite there yet. So whether it's just been a good half or if he's really figured something out that's going to propel him forward, I feel pretty lucky that we get to watch it happen.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I think even the, maybe the most impressive thing, maybe not the most impressive thing, but the thing that's, I like the most is the fact that he's starting to get into the seventh inning and through the seventh inning so much more often. I mean, that was the kind of the bugaboo with Jack Flaherty for a while there. It was, the command wasn't there and his pitch count would be at 100 after five innings. I mean, he may have had 8 strikeouts in those 5 innings. And he may not have given up but 1 or 2 runs, but you had to go to the bullpen because he was running up the pitch count. And that's, you know, he still got the strikeouts, but he's being able to be much more efficient with his pitching, and that's been a lot of fun to watch as well. So I look forward to that. He pitches in the Milwaukee series, and it feels like he's had a lot of success against the Brewers in his career, so we'll see how that goes along. As we said, the Cardinals have the Brewers Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, an off day, and then they go back home for the Reds for 3. So that should be a good week. The Cubs go to the Mets, and then they host the Brewers next weekend. And so this is maybe the biggest week of the Brewers season, running against the two teams ahead of them, and it may be make or break. I know they have 3 more with the Cardinals back in sometime in September. But this really could be big for them, and so it's going to be fun to see how this whole, you know, September is coming, and that's what we thought we would see, is these 3 teams really close to each other as we turn to the final stretch. And we got there a different path, but we've still gotten there, so it's going to be fun to see how it goes. Until then, though, we'll watch these games, and then we'll get back at you next week and talk, hopefully still about the first-place Cardinals, hopefully about the Cardinals with a much larger division lead. And who knows, maybe we'll talk about that Jack Flaherty no-hitter we keep flirting with. So until then, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under Podcasts and click Subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.